Worried about your future in tech? Master new skills, accelerate your team's impact, and redefine what's possible with Pluralsight. We're more than just another online learning platform. We're shattering the skills gap and shaping future generations of technologists. Transform your work. Transform your team. Ready to tap in? Visit us at Pluralsight.com to learn more.
John Batchelor with Joe Papalardo. Red Sky Morning is the new book, the epic true story of Texas Ranger Company F, the shootout in March of 1887 in Sabine County, includes the severe wounding of the two leaders of the Ranger unit, Company F, the killing of one, the murder of one, who's buried with great mourning by the local people, and the wounding of another, John Rogers, who will become the praying Ranger. He's a severe Presbyterian who doesn't drink, doesn't smoke. You understand. He will become a legendary captain in the future. But right now we're following J.A. Brooks because he is the sergeant that night, and he will become a legendary captain of the Rangers as well. But a year before, in a town called Alex, Brooks is caught up in law enforcement. He's asked to back up an Indian agent who is in town to confront a gunslinger cowboy who's well-connected, coming from a wealthy family named St. John. The events of that day very much changed the direction of Sergeant Brooks's life, and it gives him a taste of the other side, which he doesn't like at all, the law-breaking side. That day, Joe, let's go to the details, because there's an Indian agent. This is Indian territory, I believe, or at the edge of it. St. John is a well-understood cowboy, tough guy, who carries a weapon where he knows he should not. The Indian agent asks Sergeant Brooks and another ranger to back him up. Why and what happens?
Right. The T.R. Knight has run into St. John before and told him he shouldn't wear his guns to town, and was in very much insulted. And St. John rides away. Now, Knight didn't even have a firearm on at the time, but there's no respect for Indian agents. They're federal law enforcement officers, but there's the inherent racism and their job of trying to police cowboys who are coming in from out of state. It was, you know, that was conflict that almost seems inevitable, but there's no law that really backs them up. The federal Indian agents aren't protected by the same sort of laws that protect other law enforcement at that time. So cowboys will shoot at an Indian agent where they wouldn't normally shoot at other law enforcement. So when he sees St. John walking into the store and he's riding with two rangers because they're chasing mule thieves, he says, "Hey, guys, back me up on this one." And so the three of them stride into Red Store and Alex, where St. John is chatting up the storekeep and try to take his gun. They say, he puts his hand on his leg and says, "I'll take that gun from you, son." St. John starts to fight. And next thing you know, the store is filled with gun smoke. The Rangers have their guns out and St. John is lying dead on the floor.
Importantly, Joe makes it clear to me, this is black powder gunfire. Therefore, after the first shot, you can't see anything. You just keep shooting. You hope you can keep shooting. And you're not sure who fires the first shot. It's a scene that you can relive again and again and again. But clearly, our protagonist, Sergeant Brooks, is there to back up an Indian agent going about enforcing public order. However, because of this shootout, all three are charged with murder. And St. John's political connections mean that that murder trial will go forward. So after the shootout in 87, March of 1887, and Brooks recovers without two fingers, and he becomes extremely self-conscious about having a maimed hand the rest of his life. Joe provides a picture, and you can see him being very careful about where he puts his hand, so you can't see that he's maimed. But in any event, he is called back in August of 87 to Fort Smith, right, Joe? He's to go to the county seat, to Fort Smith, for a trial run by a very famous trial judge who is the judge of of law enforcement in the territory. This is a very popular man, Judge Isaac Charles Parker, the U.S. Court of Western District of Arkansas. And he's known as the hanging judge. Now, what's striking to me, the scene you said is wonderful. The trial is compelling, but it's on the second story of a building that used to be an army fort, I believe. Help me, Joe, if I get the details wrong. And underneath are all the rascals all together. And the odor of gangsters all living together and crowded together below comes up through the floorboards into the courtroom. Do I have that right, Joe?
Yeah, it's a dungeon. And there's already a reform effort. By the time Brooks has his trial there, there's a reform effort to clean the place up and build a new one. It's so wretchedly inadequate. So you've got the reformer descriptions of, you know, what it smells like and how many people and the overcrowding. And that's actually borne out by the officials who were also lobbying to have something new built there. So it was a terrible place to be incarcerated for any length of time. Most of the time that he and the Rangers and Knight were at the fort, they were in house arrest with the U.S. Marshal. But after the trial, they're sent down below. And for someone like Brooks, who found his entire identity after a series of failures early in his life in Texas, he became a Ranger and really he becomes a sergeant. He's a man of stature. He's always sort of one mistake away from becoming an outlaw himself in some regards. He was a heavy drinker who, you know, couldn't find his way. That's outlaw material. You're one mistake away usually. So there you go. Now he's relegated to prisoner. He's no longer a Texas Ranger because upon conviction, you have to give that up. So it's a nadir for this very famous Ranger in his entire career. This is as bad as it is ever going to get.
A grace note. When he first arrives in town for his trial, he gives us a vision of Bell Starr. And he writes about this in his memoirs. Who is Bell Starr at the time to Sergeant Brooks?
Oh, Bell Starr is a legend to Brooks, as well as pretty much everyone else in Texas and a growing swath of the country as well, thanks to the wires. And Bell Starr is the queen of the outlaws. She runs around with horse thieves. Her husbands have a habit of getting shot and killed. There'll be one shot and killed shortly after the trial that Brooks sees her coming. The thing about Bell Starr is that she's extremely stylish. She's got her, you know, she rides side saddle. She comes blowing into town on a big black horse with the U.S. Marshal escorting her. And Brooks loves a woman on a horse, as he reminisces later in life. And this image sticks with him. She comes into Fort Smith for several trials and always leaves with a not guilty verdict.
You have a picture of her in your book. It's wonderful. And taken at the time of
that's
these
the day
trials.
Of the trial. Yes. The what Brooks saw and remembered in his memoir, there's a photo from that day of the U.S. Marshal with her side saddle with the empty gun on her hip, but she wore right into town. She looks every bit of the outlaw queen that the press was calling her. And she beat the rap that time, too. As Brooks is waiting, as the wheels of justice are turning on him, he sees this, you know, proud outlaw come in and come out again, while him, the proud lawman, seems like he's going to be facing a very hostile district attorney and a very hostile jury.
And he is. And the testimony makes it clear that not only is Brooks a murderer, according to the testimony, he's a bushwhacker, because they claim that St. John was shot in the back, which may or may not have been accurate. There was nobody behind him. But depending upon, again, it's rudimentary forensics. And the jury comes back with a verdict of not guilty of murder, but guilty of manslaughter. And Brooks is now taken and incarcerated. And the wheels of politics, Joe, I love this scene because I didn't expect it to come. It turns out the Rangers are well thought of at Fort Smith, and letters are written. To whom, Joe?
The letters go straight to the one person who can get the lawman out of trouble the fastest, and that's the president of the United States, Cleveland. Grover Cleveland has a attorney general who has an entire process to accept pardon applications and ferry them to the executive office. So there's already the machinery, and Cleveland will be known as one of the most pardon granting presidents in history. So this is early in his term, though, and he doesn't have that reputation. However, the letters from Congress people. Brooks is from Kentucky, so the Kentucky delegates weigh in. There are the Texas state representatives and federal representatives, but mostly the calls come from the Democrats in Texas. And, you know, the governor is one of the first Democrats who's been elected in Texas. So you need to support your party. So Cleveland's already paying attention from a political sort of standpoint. So he's inclined to give pardons. It's politically expedient. And he's got politics involving his ideas of what should happen to the Indian territories as well, and backing the federal authority over intruding cattlemen and possible illegal settlers is a good look for him. So the pardon actually goes through very quickly, and he signs it, and the three men are cleared.
They're cleared, and this is a transformational time for the Rangers. In fact, December of that year, Scott marries. He's thinking of settling down or life after the Rangers. Brooks will marry in a few years hence, so we're going to turn to whatever happened to the Frontier Battalion. The Frontier is closing, certainly in East Texas, perhaps all across West Texas as well, but we're concentrating on the Arkansas-Louisiana border Texas. And when we come back, whatever happened to the two legendary captains? Joe Pappalardo, the author of Red Sky Morning, the epic true story of Texas Ranger Company F. It's also a story of Texas. I'm John Batchelor.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.
Hey guys, finding the perfect gift for the food lover in your life is easy. Thanks to Gold Belly. Gold Belly ships America's most iconic foods straight from world-famous restaurants right to your door. So if you want to treat someone to Joe's Stone Crab from Miami, Franklin Barbecue from Texas, or desserts from famous foodies like Ina Garten or Martha Stewart, Gold Belly has you covered with free shipping anywhere in the country. Just go to goldbelly.com and for a limited time, get 20% off your first order with promo code GIFT. That's promo code GIFT.
Hey guys, have you heard of Gold Belly? It's this amazing site where they ship the most iconic, famous foods from restaurants across the country, anywhere, nationwide. I've never found a more perfect gift than food. Goldbelly ships Chicago deep dish pizza, New York bagels, Maine lobster rolls, and even Ina Garten's famous cakes. So, if you're looking for a gift for the food lover in your life, head to goldbelly.com and get 20% off your first order with promo code GIFT. That's goldbelly.com, promo code GIFT.